Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You get what you
need. Hi there, I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and I am so glad to be with you tonight. You might know me as Carol the Coach, and this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. This is the only show on iTunes, on the internet, that is exclusively devoted the sexual addiction. I've had so many people that have contacted me via email and through the website, www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach, and they've said, thank you so much for disseminating this information. This is so helpful, and it really seems to be guiding me. You know, we interview experts, people that absolutely are experts in the field of their own specialized niche. And tonight I've got Charles, I call him Chuck Robinson, who's the National Director of Christian Programming and Outreach. And you know, interestingly, he also works at Elements Behavioral Health. And I got to tell you, Elements is one of the best treatment centers. Well, they actually have 12 treatment centers throughout the United States. And I know when I refer somebody to one of their treatment centers, they are in excellent hands. Their trauma work is hands down some of the best in the country. And, you know, they have been instrumental in creating programs specifically gauged for sexual addiction and partner trauma. They also work with other process addictions such as sex and love and eating disorders. But truly, they take a concierge approach to treatment across each one of their 12 centers. So Charles represents the Elements, and I got to tell you, the center that is the closest to me is in Nashville, because you probably know I'm based out of Indianapolis, and that's the Ranch. So highly, highly, highly recommend them. And if you want to find out more about them, you can go to www.elementsbehavioralhealth.com. And we are going to be interviewing Chuck about Loving the Addict in Your Pew. It's a book he wrote that creates a roadmap for building a church-based recovery ministry. Because I got to tell you, and you might even know this from your own personal experience, so oftentimes the church gets the referral first. When people are shamed and guilty and they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, they go to the church because they believe in their heart that if they can confess to what they're doing, they'll begin to get the help they need. And so Chuck's going to be talking about his book as well as what you can do if you too want to go to your pastor or priest. And he's also going to be talking about 12-step groups in the church because there are several. So I'm looking forward to interviewing him just here in about, 10 minutes. Now, I had a question from a man named Norm who had emailed me in the past, and he was talking about how honest should I be when I'm dating about my sexual addiction. And you might remember that one of the things that I have said to people that are dating, males and females, if they have sexual addiction recovery under their belt, is that they really need to get to know somebody at least 6 dates before they decide to divulge any information about their addiction. And there's a couple of reasons. You know, in recovery, we tell people, when you go to a 12-step meeting, go to at least 6 meetings at the same place before you make a decision as to whether you like it or not. Because usually by the 6th session, they have a real good idea of whether they enjoy the people, the process, the program, whatever. Well, I got to tell you, that is the same thing with dating. I want you to go out with somebody about 6 times before you make the decision to divulge really personal information about yourself. And then you pace yourself. You do it slowly. Now, I get all sorts of opposition from this. People say, but by the 3rd date, I really know that I like her, and it's not fair to string her along. I need to know that she is going to hang in there with me. And I say, no. You need to learn how to pace yourself. You need to learn how to develop friendship intimacy and safety in general in the relationship. And there is no reason to tell anybody your deep, dark secrets until you do. Now, Norm wanted me to know because he had written me about a 2-page email in regards to talking about when do you disclose this information to a date. He said, I want to tell you, Carol, I do not want to share any information about my sexual addiction out of guilt or obligation or to solicit pity or manipulate my date to rescue me somehow. I also don't want to share it as a get-out-of-jail card as an excuse for perhaps future slips or relapses. And I also am uncertain how to share this subject appropriately and with care so I will not harm her in a covert way. Well, one thing I can tell you already about Norm is that he's incredibly thoughtful. He's really looked at the situation, and everybody's different. Nobody has to follow what I say, but I do believe I'm a dating coach and a life coach and a mental health therapist, and I worked with enough people to know what works. He says, through this exchange with you, the previous email and my readings, the podcasts and the lectures I've listened to, and being in recovery, I've seen that at a deeper level there's a desire to covertly control the perceptions of others. And Norm says, you know, I know that's a form of manipulation and I don't want to do this anymore. And maybe I want to share prematurely because I fear being rejected or judged. And then he goes on to say that, you know, when he was coming out of an SAA meeting the other night, his girlfriend called and she asked him what he had been doing. And he said, well, I did a little yoga and then I went to my quote-unquote men's group. And then he said, I was at ease with sharing that fact because she was familiar with 12 steps and the AA program from her last relationship. Then she said, you're in a 12-step recovery group from what? And he answered, from sex addiction. She had more questions, and he slowly began to unpack the answers and became more transparent about his fears in sharing the information with her because of his hurt and her hurt that they both experienced in past relationships. Now, I think that's excellent that you've been through so many dates that as you begin to work on transparency, you unpack things very slowly. You know, we oftentimes say with parents, when kids ask questions, that's the time to answer honestly, but with as few details as possible. If they want to know details, they'll ask. And the same thing is true here. Although we all know that women are very, very skilled at getting to the information, as was this woman. See, I believe in transparency, but again, you don't owe anybody you owe them authenticity, but not transparency. You got to be authentic about, you know, maybe saying, oh, I'll go into my history as I get to know you better. You know, or I know that when people ask about dating in general and they ask about previous relationships, I tell them, I say, do not spend much time talking about your ex. There's plenty of time for that later on, but right now you need to stay in the moment, stay in the present, and enjoy each other and begin to develop a relationship that's between the two of you. So obviously Norm was really good at recognizing that there was an inner motive to him wanting to share information. And so I emphasize again, go very, very slowly. And the reason is that you don't owe somebody you're dating all the information right off the bat. There is no guarantee that you're going to be with this woman in 2 months. Now, that being said, if you've been dating somebody weekly and, you know, you're into the second month of dating, you do need to talk a little bit about what your past is like and the struggles that you may be having. And I've got people that say, maybe I should get into relationship counseling right now with you and her. And I say, no, just slow down. You need to work on pacing yourself because that's the right thing to do. And people can pace themselves. It's anxiety that creates that need to share too much. And you're working on internal and external boundaries. So you want to lead a life that's honest and open, but you really want to form first the platonic bond of friendship. And if she gets angry that you've waited till week 6, 7, or 8 to begin to share really deep secrets about yourself, she's probably not the right one for you if you've shared that you really wanted to get to know her to decide if the two of you were even going to be together to begin with. So that's my take on things. I'm Carol, the coach, and I really believe in going slow in all relationships, whether you have sex addiction in your past or whether you don't. And I promise you, if you go slow, you'll really be able not only to pace the relationship, but to assess whether this person is compatible and whether you want to spend more time with him or her. So that's a little bit of dating relationship here. 101 on Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Now, again, I am really excited to be interviewing Charles Robinson III. He has written Loving the Addict in Your Pew, A Roadmap for Building a Church-Based Recovery Ministry. And he's got a very important position at the Elements. I mean, he is an outreach director and for the Elements, which is a parent company of a family of treatment centers that are located through the United States. He's the national director of Christian programming and outreach, and he has worked diligently in this field. It's a passion of his. He believes in long-term sustainable recovery and overall improvement in quality of life. So that is his mission in working with clients. So, Charles, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Loved your book. Very readable. Loving the Addict in Your Pew. I'm curious, what made you decide to write it?
Well, I was asked to be on church staff at Henderson Hills Baptist Church in Edmond, Oklahoma in 2005. And although I knew I was called to serve, I found myself in a new position, having written my own job description and not knowing what the next step would be. So for the next 4 years, I kind of stumbled through the process and started figuring a few things out. And then the last 8 years spent, or excuse me, the last 4 years ended up spending that increasing my education. But I've 8 years, you know, into the deal, I had learned so much. And when I started working for Elements, I found myself traveling all over the United States telling the story of what I'd learned by doing dinners and lunches and that type of thing. And I said, well, this is silly. Why don't I put it all in print, and then it could get out to more people. So you can find the book on Amazon.com. The book is $11.99, and it's basically my experience and the things that I learned from the process of you know, trial and error while working on church staff, and really what I believe a roadmap for a successful recovery ministry might be. So that's really what sparked me, was that I wanted more people to be able to have the success that we had in our church.
Oh, I bet. And then was it that experience that helped you to gain the position at the Elements, which is just an amazing treatment approach? I mean, you have 12 centers across the country, and you focus on trauma work. So how did you get to get that position with them?
That's a good question. It was maybe the squeaky wheel. I found myself putting a lot of people in treatment, sitting at the desk as the recovery pastor in a large church in our community, brought people left and right with all kinds of afflictions, whether it be sex addiction or chemical dependency or thoughts of suicide or mental health. And it just opened the door to get many people the help that they needed. And I found myself in a position to where needing quality treatment was of utmost importance. And the church as a whole and our community began to look to me for direction in that particular area. And so when somebody puts a lot of people into treatment, I found myself putting most of them in Elements behavioral health facilities. They came to me and said, you know, would you like to come on board and help us do this on a national level and be able to communicate between the churches and clinicians? And after a lot of prayerful thought and discussion with mentors and accountability partners, I decided that that was the next stage that my God would have me go.
Yeah, and you know, that's just another example of how the Elements is so forward thinking, because they recognize, as I do, that clearly the church is sometimes the institution that has their pulse on what's going on in the pews. And people feel comfortable going to the church and talking about their issues. And let's face it, I'm an outpatient therapist, and there's a lot we can do from an outpatient stance. But sometimes people really need intensive work, whether it's intensive programming, inpatient or in residential treatment centers, or even through intensive. So for our listeners out there, they shouldn't see themselves as a failure. They need a residential treatment center, they should look at it as an opportunity to do some really intense, deep work to change those behaviors that are ruining their lives.
Absolutely. You know, structure is the key to change. And sometimes I have to be taken out of my normal environment in order to be able to see what needs to be changed. And then over time, making mistakes within a different environment will allow me to see the direction that I want to go. Ultimately, we're changing a normal, what we consider normal, to a new normal. And the new normal is not only sometimes difficult to find, but it's also difficult to be consistent. And so by changing our environment, at least for a short period of time, we have seen a lot of success in healing and changed lives through behavioral modification, cognitive behavioral therapy, client-centered Rogerian therapy, use some Gestalt therapies when we're in that type of clinical setting. So it really does open the door for a new pair of glasses and a new way to see our lives today. So it's not for everybody, and not everybody needs to do that, but a lot of the people that find me end up being candidates for treatment because they've gotten to a place where they can't not live without their drug of choice, whether it be sex or food or over-exercising or religiosity or chemical dependency.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Now, and certainly for me, when somebody needs very intensive help, you know, the Elements has some of the best programming actually in the world. And yet, sometimes people don't get to that place until they've tried 3 times, 13 times, or 30 times and failed. And that's when I say, hey, let's stop doing the same thing over and over again. Let's get you some intensive help and really begin the process of the deep work that you need to be successful. So tell me a little bit about what you do at the Elements, because I know that you're a recovery pastor, and then you're also obviously an outreach worker. So give me a little background on what you do in outreach and programming for the Elements.
That's also a great story, because this was another position that I actually wrote my own job description. Elements didn't have a national director of clinical programming and outreach. And so I basically do two things. I've developed a program down in Jackson, Mississippi, at one of our facilities. The facility treatment center name is called COPAC, COPAC. And within the COPAC treatment facility, we have developed 3 strands. That's the name of the Christ-centered recovery program. The name came from Ecclesiastes 4:9-12. A cord of 3 strands is not easily broken. We utilize the Celebrate Recovery material. We utilize Alcoholics Anonymous materials, Purpose-Driven Life from Rick Warren, a lot of Cloud and Townsend materials, Boundaries and Safe People. And we have developed a Christ-centered, therapeutically sound, clinically sound, evidence-based program with biblical inference. And so the programming has been the developing of the 3 strands programs in 1, possibly 2 of our facilities, the second one to be soon. And then the outreach has been an interesting piece, too, because as a licensed minister, I relate a lot to pastors, but I'm also a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. I've gotten my master's in substance abuse studies, and in the state of Oklahoma, you have to be mastered to be licensed. And so I can speak clinical, plus I have my own personal recovery of over 3 decades, and so I can also speak the words that we learn in the rooms of the 12-step rooms. So I find myself connecting pastors and clinicians together, and it's really been an interesting thing to figure out, is that oftentimes pastors are in their silos, maybe trying, knowing what they know best, their scope of practice, you know, the church and the scripture and so on and so forth, but they find themselves counseling in areas that maybe they don't know much about. And over on the clinical side, they are kind of in a silo, practicing in their scope of practice. And maybe they come from, you know, a religious worldview, and they want to kind of share their own religious worldview, although we're, you know, ethically we're not supposed to share where we come from that religious worldview. But oftentimes they do, and so they end up out of their scope of practice. And so one of the things that I end up doing is connecting pastors to clinicians and saying these people are specifically trained, for example, in sex addiction. Pastor, why don't you use this clinician over here in this particular area? And clinician, pastor is really good in the area of benevolence and maybe having recovery ministries in their church. Why don't you use that as a resource? And so connecting the two in our outreach programs through dinners and gatherings, conferences, has really been, pastorally speaking, ministry to me. So, you know, I get to do both, and I just have to pinch myself 9 times out of 10 that this is actually my job.
Oh, I can imagine so. And so in some ways, you are the encourager to both parties that you've connected them to the right people. And so in your book, you talk about the epidemics of people in the church and how they're afflicted with all sorts of hurts, hang-ups, and habits. Now, let me ask you, how prevalent do you believe that sexual addiction might be in the church?
Well, when, as the pastor of recovery in a large congregation, and being in the Baptist denomination, I'm not so naive to think that there's not alcohol and or drugs going on in the church. But that is not what I sensed when I would sense affliction in the church, and from a biblical sense. And what I would sense is that there was something, a secret being hidden. And what I found in sitting at my desk is that secret was generally some form of sex addiction, usually looking at pornography. And I don't know what it is. I mean, man seems to twist the scriptures to believe what they want to believe. And I saw a lot of men and women that would come to me just crying out for help because they had been caught in a precarious situation with, you know, the internet. And I furthered my education by being trained by Patrick Carms and the ITAP organization as a certified sex addiction therapist because I felt like it was so prevalent. And then I'd run across slides like from Lifeway Research that I use in one of my talks that said 1,000 pastors were surveyed, and they were asked, what's the percentage of men in your church that you believe are addicted to pornography? And out of those 1,000 pastors, only 10% of them thought that there was an issue with pornography in the church. And it was even less when the same question was asked when it came to women. And, you know, Lifeway says that when they look at the addiction of pornography in the church, they're seeing some 33% women addicted to pornography and 67% of men that view that are all internet users. I've also seen the same statistic as 52% men and 48% women. So there's a large group. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. And to think that that multi-billion-dollar industry is not in our church is head in the sand. So that affliction, and, you know, I'm so holy that I won't have these problems, and that special, you know, I'm unique because I believe it's prevalent in the church. It's prevalent in a lot of different religious organizations. And there's obviously still the chemical dependency. I really see the chemical dependency in the next generation. So mom and dad have changed their lives, and they're followers of Christ and going to Bible studies and trying to raise their kids in the way of the church and the way of the Lord, and then all of a sudden their kids rebel. And so I'm seeing a lot of 18 to 25-year-old young people that were active in their youth group now finding their way into treatment. I spent the whole day on a case today, and a 22-year-old, and he's already been to treatment four times, and his family are good people. But his perception or the rigidity in the home or the disengagement in the home, a lot of different reasons. Perception. He may have seen it to be different than it actually was. His truth is not the truth. And so what we see is that addiction as a whole is prevalent in our worship centers. And it's not a new deal. If you read the Bible, there's affliction that goes back to Adam and Eve. This isn't something brand new, but it happens to be recovery ministry happens to be something new in the church. And so the reason for the book was, if we're going to say that all people are welcome into this house, we need to be prepared. We need to be resourced up. We need to be educated. We need to know where to send our people when our people get sick. And it's the only affliction I know, and I'm all about wanting people to go to the church elders and receive prayer and anointing with oil. All of that's fine. But with this particular affliction, we want to then say, so now you need to stop doing what you were doing. And if they could stop doing what they were doing, they would have already stopped. So we need to know, okay, we'll pray for you, we'll send you off, but we need to know where to send you. And so I encourage the church to gather up resources, know where your homeless shelters are, know who your sex addiction therapists are, know who your chemical dependency therapists are, where treatment centers are, so on and so forth, so that we can truly help our members of our congregations.
Well, and obviously, as a recovery pastor and as a certified sexual addictions therapist, you understand it holistically across the board. And again,
absolutely.
I don't know that there are other recovery pastors in other institutions. And the one you specifically work in is what?
Well, I work for Elements Behavioral Health.
Right,
but
and the name of your treatment center is?
The name of the treatment center is COPAC, C-O-P-A-C, COPAC in Jackson, Mississippi. But I don't actually work at COPAC. I work nationally sending people to all of Elements facilities because not everybody
right.
is
you're
interested.
Like the referral person that gets them to the right location considering
exactly.
the right, obviously, form of treatment. And I do believe that's why you can clearly say that Elements is kind of a concierge of services based on what people need.
Exactly.
They do just a great job of getting people to the right facility. Now, I mentioned the ranch because obviously they're very close to us. So for people that may be counting their pennies, you know, they can drive there and it's easier to get back and forth. But what I find with trauma work is that people are willing to do what it takes to get to the facility that meets their needs the best. And obviously the Elements deals with sex and love and eating disorders and drug and alcohol addiction. And gosh, you even mentioned workaholism. You mentioned gambling. You mentioned exercise. addiction.
Right.
So when addictions become compulsive, the elements can handle that, can't they?
Exactly. And, you know, when I meet the people in our community, I meet the person afflicted right where they are. And although I have evangelistic tendencies, I believe that treatment centers are called to treat, and the church is called to make disciples, that treatment centers aren't called to proselytize. So I would prefer to take somebody for 30 days and treat them for their trauma or their affliction at hand, and then send them back to the church and let the church do the discipleship work. So although I feel very strongly about my own personal religious beliefs, I am also enough of a clinician to realize that not everybody is as fired up about that as I am. And so I take the client where they are. This particular one I work today is interested in Christian treatment, so he's going to go to the ranch first and then end up at Copac. Another might end up at Promises Malibu or Brightwater Landing in Pennsylvania, or Lucida down in West Palm Beach, Florida, or all of our Right Step facilities that are in Texas are all in network. So there's really a place for everybody to go. They don't need to stay within the confounds of their own state, or they can reach out and get the help that they need by just calling somebody either from the Element system or maybe local treatment centers in your particular area.
Well, and you and I both know that one of the best ways to get specialized help is to go to sexhelp.com and look for a CSAT, a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist, in your state, city, zip code. And then, obviously, if you're looking for a treatment center like Chuck's talking about, you can go to www.elementsbehavioralhealth.com and take a look at the 12 centers and see who the outreach director is, and then give them a call and find out about their services. Because, obviously, again, you're the conduit between people that have strong spiritual faith and perhaps some shame, blame, guilt that they've let God down or they've let their own religion down. I mean, in some ways, when I meet somebody who is very spiritually based, who has hidden this dark secret for such a long time, I feel like they feel extra shame because they know the person they could be. They know God's love for them. And they feel like they betrayed God. They betrayed their spiritual community, their pastors, their elders, their deacons, whatever, and their own families, communities, and, of course, themselves.
Absolutely. You want to go on the road with me? It sounds like you've got it down pretty
sure,
well.
Sure, I'd love to do that. I feel like I'm on the road every Monday night. But I do believe in this. And, you know, we don't want people to feel shame. You know, we want them to feel good enough to get the help they need and not keep that deep, dark secret. So let me ask you a couple other questions. You know, you are an expert at 12-step recovery. You've lived that life. You've trained that life. And you've been part of a church ministry. So why do you believe it's important to have a recovery ministry in everybody's local church?
You know, the church is one place that people do come and ask for help. And the church, by its own definition, is a place where all people are welcome. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard it or maybe even said it myself, when all else failed, I prayed. I think oftentimes the church can be the first place that people go, depending upon the type of, you know, maybe the way they're living their lives at the time they find out that they need some help. But it also can be the last place that people go. but it is a place. Now, some will show up at traditional recovery meetings, and I mean, I found my higher power in traditional recovery meetings. That being said, I was in church on the Sunday before and church on the Sunday after, and it was because I met people that accepted me for exactly who I was, and there was mercy and there was grace. And I think that's what the church wants to be and oftentimes is. But when we have a recovery ministry in the church, all those things that nobody else wants to talk about, I remember my phone would ring when the rest of the pastors didn't necessarily know how to deal with the situation at hand, and I would get that call. And so the recovery pastor ends up being an extension of the care pastor and is there to support and help provide peer support meetings during the week, but also be the one with the resources. It can be a very difficult job. You find yourselves facing death right in the eyes. You know, there are people that I've seen on ventilators that overdosed, or people that I had to identify after taking their own life. But I've also seen the young man who came to my house and didn't have a prayer, hadn't completed his college education, got sober finally, ended up not only living in our recovery house but managing our recovery house while finishing up his bachelor's degree, made an effort to go and take the medical school exam, passed it, went in front of the board, said, "I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. These are the things that I've done, but I'm sober today." Went on, got into medical school, just graduated from medical school, and is now doing an internship at Duke University. I mean, wow, what a change from a heroin addict to a potential internal medicine doctor. So the good comes with the bad. You get the great joys of seeing life change, see the light come on in somebody's eyes, the change in their voice, the way they carry themselves with some self-esteem and structure in their lives, families being brought back together. So, you know, it's worth it. I guess I'm now addicted to change lives. And so that's why I believe that the church needs to have that type of resource in it. And I'm talking about the universal church. Maybe not every small little local church community needs to have a recovery ministry, but they need to at least be tied into the larger churches that do have a recovery ministry so that they will have a place to send their folks. Because no matter how big or how large your church is going to be, people are going to come with these type of afflictions and illnesses that need to be tended to. And so I believe that the church absolutely must, by its own definition, be a place where all people can attend and find the help that they need.
And, you know, obviously Celebrate Recovery is a 12-step recovery group that is organized and sponsored by the churches. What do you think about Celebrate Recovery for people with sexual addiction?
Well, I work with Celebrate Recovery. I don't work for. I just, as part of my volunteer ministry work, is with the Celebrate Recovery community. And, you know, Celebrate Recovery, like your traditional recovery, 12-step recovery groups, is all peer-led and peer-supported. And that's really an important fact, because the recovery meetings aren't led by clinicians. Those are group processing. And so when something is led by a clinician, a CSAT or et cetera, they can get a different type of help than they get in a peer support group. And I'm supportive of peer support groups. You know, I have found solutions. These are the solutions that I found. It might help you. And I like what the Celebrate Recovery community has offered. I know when I got sober in traditional recovery, I couldn't talk about being in recovery in the church, and then I couldn't talk about being in church in my recovery meetings. And so what Celebrate Recovery has done is they've connected, you know, the 12 steps, the 8 principles, the Beatitudes found in Matthew 5, and said, we've got a full-blown program built around the 12 steps that you can mention that Jesus Christ is your higher power. In traditional recovery, everything stays kind of generic, and I understand why. But in the Celebrate Recovery program, the specific deity is mentioned and interjected in all of the work. So I believe it serves an important place in the recovery community. Again, it's not for everybody, but it is available in a lot of churches. You can the Ministry of Celebrate Recovery actually started at Rick Warren's church at Saddleback in Orange County, California in 1991, and now they're in like 23 countries, 25 countries, in multiple languages. So you can go to www.celebraterecovery.com and find a meeting in your local community. I believe it serves a good purpose in our communities.
Well, it really seems like it does. Now, let me ask you, because obviously there is a whole host of people, myself included, that feels like sex addiction is a more difficult addiction to manage than even drugs, alcohol, nicotine, caffeine, that kind of thing, because it is a process addiction.
Exactly.
And so in Celebrate Recovery, I've never been to a Celebrate Recovery meeting, but what I understand it to involve is anybody with an addiction can come to the meeting and share the principles, the 12 steps, and work their program. Am I correct,
correct.
In that understanding?
Yes, yes, you are.
Okay. And so you find that people who perhaps are in recovery from alcoholism or struggling with alcoholism and that go to a Celebrate Recovery meeting, do you find that people with sexual addiction are as comfortable to share that with alcoholics or drug addicts or food addicts or gamblers?
Well, Celebrate Recovery, and again, I don't represent Celebrate Recovery, I'm just a volunteer. But Celebrate Recovery says that all people are welcome who have hurts, hang-ups, and habits. And, you know, I think process addictions, we oftentimes struggle with the definition of what sobriety means. And Celebrate Recovery doesn't take a position on what that definition is, like in some of the traditional sexual addiction programs do. And it receives the peer support from their fellows. And in our particular church, the largest group that we have at Henderson Hills Baptist Church is men's sexual addiction. And this is a Celebrate Recovery that has 150, 180 people that show up weekly.
Wow, that's amazing. Absolutely
yeah.
amazing.
And,
so you know,
it really depends upon
the leadership.
I really
appreciate, for any of our listeners out there, there are people that when they get into 12-step work, obviously all the steps involve your higher power, but the first three, yeah, you have to work through the first three steps specifically regarding your relationship with your higher power. And what I heard you just saying is that for a lot of Christians, they don't want to talk about their higher power. They want to talk about God. God is their higher power, and they have that personal relationship. And so that's really important to them. Is that correct?
That is correct. And earlier when we were talking about sex addiction, each Celebrate Recovery group takes on the image of the leadership of that particular group. So not all Celebrate Recoveries will have a strong sex addiction group, but the one that I particularly was, and depending upon the leadership of the group, it would kind of sway towards, you know, one or the other of the afflictions, and you know, which could be gambling, food, alcohol, drugs, pornography, sex. So, you know, it's a safe place for people to go, and there's still such a stigma when it comes to sex. When I got sober from alcohol, I remember going to my beginning meetings and people saying, I can't be an alcoholic. I didn't live under a bridge. Because at that time, the stigma with alcoholism is a skid row bum. No longer is it the stigma with drugs and alcohol. Heck, we just saw a phenomenal exchange of American swimmer who found recovery 2 years ago. And his life has changed. So there's not that stigma, but there's still the stigma with sex addiction. And I think in the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, when some folks step up and say, you know, I was one and now I'm not, that stigma is going to lose too. But it is still a very sensitive subject in the church. And the fact that the church is having, you know, Celebrate Recovery and they're discussing these topics, I think, is a great step in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, as I said, my experience is when people have that deep, meaningful relationship with Christ, they want a program that really speaks to them about that relationship. And then, of course, we have people on the other end that say they're agnostic or atheist, and that's when the 12-step program can say, hey, your higher power can be yourself. Hey, your higher power can be your the 12-step meeting itself. Whatever works to get you connected to these principles and these 12 steps. And then I see that there are people in the middle, you know, they're not quite sure what they believe. And oftentimes the 12-step program helps them to develop a relationship with their higher power / God that they've never even had before. And that's always a beautiful thing to see, too, because they're not alone. They're not alone anymore.
Exactly. And that was really my experience. I was raised in the church, and, you know, every time the doors opened, my family was there. But I really found my relationship with God in the rooms of recovery. Then I took it back into the church. So it wasn't the other way around for me. I didn't find it in church and then take it to the rooms. And I understand the reason why the rooms, traditional recovery rooms, don't go there. And when I'm in the traditional recovery rooms, I don't go there either. I think it's all a part of the understanding process.
100%. So now let's talk a little bit more about resources for our clients and for the listeners that, you know, are just tuning in and we're kind of fascinated to find out, yeah, what part does the church play and what is a recovery pastor? And, you know, talk about this book, Loving the Addict in Your Pew, A Roadmap for Building a Church-Based Recovery Ministry. I'm talking with Charles Robinson, and he is a recovery pastor. He's the author of this book, and he is an outreach director for the Elements Behavioral Health. Now, let me ask Chuck, what do you believe is the importance of screening and assessment in the role of recovery pastor, and where can our listeners find some of these screening tools?
Well, I can't share about the screening tools without sharing a bit of my own story. When I was hired as the recovery pastor, I was a guy that loved my Lord and had a recovery story. So with those two, and I think those are very important principles in the process of building of who can be a recovery pastor. But from that perspective, I only knew my own story and my own personal experience. I did not have knowledge of mental health, of bipolar disorder, what antisocial or borderline personality disorders were, or, you know, I hadn't personally experienced deep depression or high anxiety. And so I could kind of see just through guessing, but I really wasn't knowledgeable. And so I ultimately found myself feeling called, literally called, to go back to school. And so at age 53, I went back and got my master's in substance abuse studies and went on to sit for the licensure exams to become a clinician. So I believe that it's important for a recovery pastor to understand mental health and substance abuse and sex addiction and signs of financial mismanagement or compulsive behaviors. And one of the things that I think that recovery pastor needs to do, along with maybe having a story of their own and being in love with their higher power, is to go and get educated. Screening is so important because you can't hit everybody with the same hammer. You can't say, oh, that's this, or oh, that's that. It could be a mixture of all of the above. We know there's a syndrome out there called addiction interaction disorder, AID. Patrick Carnes taught us about that. And, you know, basically what that says is where there's one affliction, there's probably another and maybe even another. So not everybody, just because it doesn't take a brain surgeon to be able to figure out if somebody drinks too much. You know, but what else is going on with that person? And so I think it's really important for the recovery pastor to be able to screen and see so that they can help the individual find the resources that they need instead of hitting everybody and saying, boop, you need to go to 12-step meeting. Boop, you need to go to Celebrate Recovery. Because not everybody with a mental health diagnosis and or substance dependence are prepared to go and share in a peer support meeting. They may need a higher level of care. So I strongly support the church educating their recovery pastor, at least in certification, but preferably in licensure. And so that they can be able to begin the diagnosing process and help their church members find recovery. So the screening, the assessments, is of utmost importance. In my book, in Chapter 5, it talks about screening and assessments. And at the back of the book, in the appendices, I give a number of screening tools. The one I like to use the most is the multi-dimensional addictions and personality profile. It's called MAPP, MAP, and it's a 98-question thorough screening that can tell not only if the individual is in denial or what, but it'll also tell at what level of care do they need. Do they need intensive outpatient, or do they need psychoeducation, or do they need intensive inpatient or partial hospitalization? One of the simpler tests is the Michigan Alcohol Screening Test. It's called MAST, M-A-S-T, and it can be found, you know, just online. There's questionnaires out there for suicide, the SBQ-R Suicide Behaviors Questionnaire that can be found online. The different stages, the models and stages of change can be found online. So all yet one would need to do if they were curious is just go on screening and assessment, Google it, and you'll find all kinds of screening tools. There's short ones, long ones, one you need to be trained on, and others that you could in the beginning stages of being a recovery pastor or just a person in need trying to help the community, there's all kinds of tools out there that one could use.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm looking at the time. I see we have to go. I'm wondering if I can book you in the future to talk about self-care and the importance of that for us as clinicians, for pastors, and, of course, for addicts in recovery, because I know you have a wealth of knowledge, and the whole end of your book is designated on self-care. So can I book you for the future?
Yes, ma'am. Please feel free to do that. I can't thank you enough for having me on. You do a mighty good work, and I'm very supportive of your work, and I thank you for what you do for the people in your community and allowing folks like myself to participate in sharing with your community. So thank you very much.
Well, you are welcome, and thank you, and I look forward to talking with you again, and you just keep up the good work, Chuck. Really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Uh huh.
Blessings.
All right. Take care. You too. God
right.
bless you.
God bless you.
All
Bye-bye.
Right. That was Charles Robinson. And again, he wrote the book, Loving the Addict in Your Pew, A Roadmap for Building a Church-Based Recovery Ministry. And he works specifically for Elements Behavioral Health. And that website is ElementsBehavioralHealth.com. They have 12 concierge services centers in the United States. They really have the best trauma work hands down in this country. And they're thought leaders, and they just have always been ahead of the game when it comes to treatment and services for clients. So we thank them, too, for putting this together for us. And again, I thank you for being a listener here on the show. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. So I fearlessly want you to have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you next week for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And again, have the courage to be authentic and transparent and maintain good recovery. Have a good one.